And I think in a lot of dairy situations, you know, if we're limiting there and we don't get the estradiol production that we need, then she doesn't exhibit estrus and she doesn't get bred. So there's some effects in there for sure. And making sure we have some methionine in that uterine environment as that conceptus, as, you know, after fertilization, I can remember back in the old days thinking, well, shoot, after fertilization, it just attaches and goes on. Well, there's a lot of early embryonic death that is hard to measure.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Adiseo USA, producers of SmartAmine M and MilkPay.com. Hi-D from DSM Firmenich can help improve cattle's vitamin D status to deliver higher milk yield and carcass efficiency. Asepsis, an ounce of prevention. With early detection in health, reproduction, and feeding, SmaxTech future-proofs your dairy operation. Excellent, a novel product for the management of hypocalcemia. It's uncomplicated excellence. Volac, unlocking ruminant potential through nutritional solutions for a sustainable future.
Hello, welcome back to another episode of the Dairy Podcast Show brought to you by Wisenetics. My name is Barry Bradford from Michigan State University, and today I'm happy to welcome to the show Dr. Craig Peel. Dr. Peel works at Colorado State University as well as wearing several other hats. So Dr. Peel, thanks so much for joining us on the show today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for the invite.
So although you live in Colorado, people may be picking up from your voice that that's not where you were born. You want to give us a little bit of your background?
Sure. Yeah, I grew up in Texas, managed a ranch on the border for a time, and then went to grad school at Texas A&M. But yeah, native Texan. I tell people, though, I've been in Colorado long enough that I can talk a lot faster than I used to. And that was always a challenge. When I was at CSU, I'd go back home for Thanksgiving or something. They go, oh yeah, you've been back to Texas. You need to speed it up a little bit. So I have worked on it and I try to do a better job at it, but yeah, I am from Texas and we've been in Colorado for 23 years, came here to work at CSU and now doing some other things, but still as an adjunct faculty there.
I have to ask, you managed a ranch on the Rio Grande River. Is that what you mean?
We did. Yeah. Right out of undergrad with an animal science degree, I was a county agent for 2 years. And then I took over a 74,000 acre ranch for a family down there. And it was right on the border with the Rio Grande. That was a challenge. And I figured out real quick, I was either going to die there or I had to get away. So grad school was a better option than dying on the border. So it wasn't as bad then as it is now, but it was still pretty dicey down there.
I'm curious what kind of rainfall. I know I've talked to people in New Mexico that it was a stocking rate of like 40 acres per cow-calf pair. What was it like there?
It was about the same there. I mean, we would get 8 to 10 inches of rain a year. And you might get that rain in two events.
Right. Wow.
And you know, it might be in the winter when you can't grow any grass. But, you know, one thing there, I never had to shovel snow, which is coming up here in Colorado. That's one of my least favorite activities to do.
Adiseo, a global leader in nutritional solutions and the provider of SmartAmine M, the best in-class rumen-protected methionine product for dairy producers who want to optimize milk production, capture more value from their components, and maintain the lifetime performance of their herds. For more product information and to calculate your return on investment when you balance your feed with amino acids, go to milkpay.com.
Okay, so and what did you focus on for most of your research and teaching work at Colorado State, and what do you continue to do there?
Yeah, well, when I was at A&M, in graduate school, I mean, like a lot of people, I went back and was going to be a veterinarian, and then I kind of did some ROI on the money and decided I would go the other route. But I focused on nutrition primarily in grad school as a master's degree, and then I kind of looked around and said, man, there's people doing all kinds of things, but I don't want to be a feed mill manager with a master's in nutrition. So my PhD was, I managed a lot of reproductive work for a guy named Fuller Baser, which is one of the top reproductive physiologists around. I learned a lot from him, and Tom Spencer was there then. Troy Ott was there for a little while. So got to do a lot of work with those guys. And then at the same time, my PhD is actually in meat science. So I did some heart carcass grading stuff and a bunch of plants across the U.S. and had a good time with that. So when I came to CSU, it was originally to be part of a new program they started called Integrated Resource Management. That was kind of who I was, because I'd come from this ranching and done all these different things, right? And how do you take agriculture and take the big picture and put it all together and make a living? So that was when I came here originally. And then, you know, a long sort of events, but ended up in animal science more and doing more on. We did a lot of synchronization stuff, ester synchronization in cattle, primarily with beef. Did a lot of other things with range guys, a lot of cooperation around the university, kind of keeping that integrated focus in check and or applied across a lot of different disciplines there. So, but I taught the introductory animal science class. That was my favorite.
Okay.
You know, we got to where we taught it every semester and have 250 to 300 in there.
Wow.
And it was just because I think I made it fun. And it was a goal of mine to make sure people understood where their food came from. But also accepting and listening to concerns and questions and trying to feel those and trying to put that out there and help students understand more about what we really do in agriculture. And I tell people all the time, I don't mind if you choose to be a vegetarian on good information. But if you choose it because your high school biology teacher told you something that was not true, that I have a problem with. So enjoyed doing the introductory animal science. I taught reproductive physiology, several different classes. I mean, I had one of the biggest teaching loads in the department, but it was fun.
Yeah, 500 or 600 students a year to impact through that intro class. That's huge.
Yeah, it was fun. And when I first started, you probably knew Tom Field back in the old days. He taught it, and I took over from him. And that was a big shoes to fill at the time. And because Tom was one of the best teachers around, so learned a lot from him. And I think we had fun in that class. And you know, kind of redid the labs where it was more hands-on than they had in the past. And just understanding the new students that were coming in that were not coming in from an ag background.
Absolutely. So what are you spending most of your time on now?
You know, I still do quite a bit of consulting in different areas. A lot of beef, you know, a lot of repro, a lot of human resource stuff. I mean, being on that ranch in Texas, I learned how to speak Spanish. You either learn how to speak Spanish or you do all the work by yourself. So that's come in handy, you know, on dairies and being able to help these guys understand, especially from a feeding perspective, here's why we're asking you to do this. Here's why this is a certain order of feeds to go in there. Here's what it looks like when you don't follow the instructions and, you know, and helping them understand. I mean, when it calls for 200 pounds of mineral, we need to make sure there's 200 pounds in there, not 300 and not 100, but you know, the effects of that. So it has worked well for me to be able to be able to communicate with some of these guys that English is not their first language.
Yeah, I bet.
And then I work for Adiseo, doing technical support in the West. And we've just recently kind of stepped into looking at some beef opportunities and beef cow with some of these rumen protected products and organic selenium and a couple other things that they have that I think would have some application in the beef world.
Fascinating. Well, let's talk about those amino acids a little bit. Maybe it's good to start with, you know, probably people are used to hearing about bypass amino acids. Can you kind of just start with, like, why do we even have those? Why are those products around? Is there a real need for them?
Well, as you know well, and probably a lot of your viewers know, is that the rumen microbes take a toll on everything we put in there. And so a lot of times what we put in is not what ends up in the small intestine to be absorbed and be used by the animal. So it's especially on a methionine and, you know, and some lysine, things like that get broken down readily by rumen microbes. So it's beneficial for us to see if we can get that to that small intestine where it can be absorbed intact and the animal will be able to use it as a real methionine and really as an amino acid.
Yeah, you kind of alluded to this has been on the ruminant side. It's been primarily focused on dairy, although you said, you know, there probably are some applications on the beef side. Why has this been more obvious, you know, to use in dairy cattle than in beef cattle?
Well, you know, I think in the dairy world, we can see an instant benefit. You know, I mean, you can feed a rumen protected methionine and see a protein move in your milk the next day. You know, I mean, it's quick and it's easy to measure. The problem is if a producer, a dairy producer is not getting paid for extra protein, then they're really hesitant to add a cost to a rumen protected methionine in the diet. So there's in the ruminant animals, there's not a lot of literature out there. And I'm just curious as to what stages are there of the production cycle and what times of the year, maybe in the growing cycle, are we limiting methionine in those animals? And are they really or are they not? I don't know. And you know, when we talk about doing a better job and being better stewards and using our science, and to me, if you're balancing just on crude protein, I mean, you don't even really know what the amino acid makeup is of that crude protein formulation. I mean, it's just a big number of nitrogen is really all that is.
Yep.
So I just think for us to do a better job on on efficiency and doing a better job from an environmental standpoint, an animal health standpoint. I think understanding and getting more precise in that protein and how we're supplementing that to our ruminant animals is extremely important.
Yep. So obviously, methionine's one of the essential amino acids and often considered, the first limiting one.
Right.
You make a good point. The first thing people think about is milk protein, and not every situation, not every milk shed really rewards more milk protein. But there's been a lot of work in the last 20 years on sort of more complicated responses to methionine, like immunity or reproduction.
Sure.
What do we know about impacts on reproduction from feeding bypass methionine?
Well, there's been quite a few studies probably starting around 2015, somewhere in there, and have continued to go on. But just looking at the effects on the follicle, the effects on the embryo, the health of the embryo as they're, after implantation and or even before, just for uterine health. So, 3-beta-hydroxysteroid dehydrogenase is an important enzyme in the follicle to be able to convert cholesterol to estradiol. And I think in a lot of dairy situations, if we're limiting there, and we don't get the estradiol production that we need, then she doesn't exhibit estrus and she doesn't get bred. So there's some effects in there for sure. And making sure we have some methionine in that uterine environment as that conceptus, as after fertilization, I can remember back in the old days thinking, well, shoot, after fertilization, it just attaches and goes on. Well, there's a lot of early embryonic death that is hard to measure. When somebody says, oh, I have this conception rate, George Seidel was one of my mentors here at CSU, and George would always, anytime he saw conception rate in a publication, he would just shake and almost lose it. And I went, well, what's the matter? And he goes, we can't measure that, right? We can measure pregnancy. We can measure post-implantation. But what happens when that embryo is free-floating before it actually attaches? And so there's some good work out there that's shown that we, with some methionine in that uterine fluid, it helps with survival of that conceptus prior to implantation.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's really no way to differentiate between a lack of fertilization and a lack of implantation, right? We just don't know.
Yeah, but you hear that term all the time. Oh, we increased conception rate. Well, I'm going to have to challenge you to show me how you did that,
right?
And how you measured it, because we can measure pregnancy rate real easy.
You brought up a key enzyme for converting cholesterol to estradiol. How is that related to methionine supply? Tie that together for me.
Well, I think it's a building block of how that goes between the cells within the follicle itself of transferring between cholesterol in packaging in one side and then coming out the other side of as estradiol, taking that cholesterol as a building block to make estradiol.
What about, you mentioned sort of all the steps necessary. We've got to have a good oocyte. We've got to have, follicular function and then implantation. What about the later steps? So some of the evidence about maybe improved retention of a conceptus with methionine, how might that work? What's the thoughts around that?
Well, it's always funny to me, Barry, how some of my experiences just keep coming around. So when I was in grad school at A&M, that's when Fuller and those guys and Troy and Tom were doing a lot of research on interferon tau. And they were kind of some of the first guys, that did that. And
yes.
And I remember all that going on. I wasn't all plugged into it because I was kind of doing something else. But, it's funny now coming back to that, how it's, it goes all the way back to then. And that was, late 90s when those guys were doing a lot of that. So it does help. I mean, there's some good research, some good data out there to say that methionine supplementation increases the production of that interferon tau by that embryo. And I think it just adds up to all we've been talking about, right? You have a good follicle, you have a strong oocyte that comes out, you have good insemination, you have a good fertilization, you have nutrition in the uterus. And then all that adds up just to be a stronger pregnancy rate in cattle going forward. So it's a combination of everything. You have the interferon tau, you have better embryos, you have better urinary environment.
Okay, let's turn to a sort of a more applied perspective on this. Holistically, if you're going in and consulting with a dairy farm and they're not happy with their pregnancy rates, what do you think are the biggest challenges that you see most often? What are the problems that are most common?
When I was at the university, I did a lot of consulting, and I didn't understand. I just go in and fix a problem and leave. It was an adjustment into this consulting world of, you know, relationship and evaluating everything and looking at the thing, like you said, in a holistic fashion. So it's been a little bit different, and it was an adjustment for me for sure. But, you know, going back to my professor thing, maybe I'm a little more philosophical and theoretical than I should be sometimes, but I just wonder, as a nutritionist and as the way we manage dairy cows on such a expense-based and cost-based system, are we limiting ourselves based on this least cost formulation? It may be a least cost on the front end, but I think it's a big cost on the other end. And to me, it comes down to, you know, if I go in and evaluate reproduction, I mean, the first thing you look at is body condition. And then if you track in your close-up cows, and if you track that back, then you go back and look at far-off cows, see what they're doing. And then you go all the way back and look at cows that dry off and see what's going on there. But I just feel like we could do, when we breed them, I've kind of become this believer in these epigenetic effects of things that happen in utero, or maybe even in that oocyte itself, as that DNA is getting duplicated. If we're limiting, let's just say methionine, because I mean, everybody can agree that's the most rate limiting in animals. Well, what if when we limit, we're on the tail end of that lactation or in mid lactation, and we're getting those cows bred and they're short on methionine, is there a trigger, something genetically that says, okay, methionine's always going to be short, so trigger these genes to turn off and limit production in that offspring from that oocyte. And so I think there's a lot of moving parts in there that I think we don't always consider as nutritionists or as consultants. What's the real long-term effects of that? And even though you're not getting paid on milk protein right now, what if by supplementing, making that investment, that progeny, you know, Jeff Dahl's stuff in Florida on heat stress is a great example of these epigenetic effects downstream and on future generations. Is that offspring, that heifer, is she going to produce less milk because she's already being told that methionine is going to be limited in her DNA? So, I think that's a huge question, right? I mean, I think it's, I could answer it real easy and go, yeah, you look at body condition score and you look at energy and dry matter intake, right? I mean, that's the easy things, but I think those are the tools we have to change. But I just wonder about what the big effects are down the road when we make these least cost decisions.
It is interesting. This is just pure anecdote, but it does seem like really well-managed farms that have been in the same hands for a long time tend to have better performance,
right,
than you would attribute just to like that management level for the last year. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's because of a continuity of the system.
Yep.
And maybe you have some genetic effects in that system of these cows that you've indirectly selected for cows that operate best in my system. And those same farms are going to be same ownership, same management, same nutritionist, same feed manufacturers. I mean, the more consistency you have across those farms, you'll see those guys be a lot more successful.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Introducing Ultrasorb R3.0, Volac's comprehensive and complete solution to reduce the negative impact of naturally occurring toxins on ruminants. Ultrasorb R3.0 is a species-specific product designed to mitigate the effects of specific mycotoxins in the gastrointestinal tract of ruminants. Ultrasorb R3.0 also offers lipopolysaccharides binding capabilities. Endotoxins such as LPS can contribute to inflammation in ruminants, with energy partitioned to mount an immune response instead of production. Learn more about Ultrasorb R3.0 at volac.com.
Are you seeing people utilizing bypass amino acids in new ways or different? I guess I come from that question that comes from basically thinking about a lot of people focusing on early lactation cows and maybe through breeding pens, but we have more and more farms that are not feeding a late lactation group necessarily, which I think is a mistake. But you know, how do you see people using these in different ways, I guess?
You know, I mean, it depends on, and I tell the management at Adiseo always asks me, well, why would people not balance for amino acids? And I said, well, if you tell me who the nutritionist studied under in school, I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's a philosophical piece that I believe with, you know, some faculty, they believe in amino acid balancing and some don't. And so their progeny or their students tend to come out and have the same mindset. I mean, you and I probably did the same thing with guys we studied with. So
yeah,
the ones that have been trained and really, really are interested in amino acid balancing do a lot of different things. And they're experimenting and they're looking at different ways and, you know, looking at their late lactation diets. What can we do there? How do we make adjustments there? I mean, I agree with you that, you know, you can definitely save some money on late lactation diets and you can definitely affect cow health on late lactation diets.
Yeah.
So to answer your question, it just depends on who you talk to. You know, there's people that believe that amino acid balancing in the close-up is extremely important and up until breeding, and then they kind of shift out of that and it's not as important. And then there's some people that believe it is equally important throughout the whole process. So again, it just depends a little bit on bias and on training and experientially. And then what is that dairy owner giving them the opportunity to do? Is he saying you have to meet this price point? And then you got to make decisions on what's important to you.
It's time for our famous three.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Trow Nutrition, North America. Everything we do is driven by passion and backed by science. Feed solutions that surpass expectations. Learn more about the benefits of working with Schooler. Visit schooler.com/feed. That's schooler.com/feed. Our Yeast 40, ruminal and intestinal double modulation by ICC Animal Nutrition. Natural Biologics delivers cost-effective solutions to improve health and productivity, helping conquer the rumen health and immunity challenges your animals face. Diamond V, because animal health deserves a healthier approach. Your partner for extra animal performance, Berg & Schmidt Animal Nutrition. Mycotoxins are silent poisons, challenging the health and productivity of your cows. Protect your cows and your business by testing feedstuffs to know which mycotoxins are present in your environment. With that information in hand, you can work with your nutritionist to develop a management program to reduce mycotoxin impacts on your cows and your operation. To get started with your own mycotoxin control program, talk to your Diamond V representative today.
Well, you know, given how many students you've taught over the years and the breadth of topics you taught, I'm actually really excited to see what you have to share with us on these three questions we throw at everybody.
It may not be as good as you think, but it might.
And I know you span dairy, beef, and probably beyond that, but curious, is there a dairy book or resource that you turn to most frequently?
You know, honestly, and it's going to be a shock probably to the younger people, but do you remember the Pond and Church book, the big brown one?
Yeah.
I mean, I still like to go back and look at that book. And yeah, we've made all these strides and in calculations and, you know, in nutrient density, all that. I mean, there's a lot of differences there, but I think there's still a lot of relevance to that old big, thick brown book that everybody carried around back in the day.
I probably felt this way as a student too, but I know like when I would teach introductory animal nutrition, you know, some students would be like, oh, this book is so old. Why are we using this book? And it's like, well, the intro level nutrition doesn't really change that.
Right.
Like, nothing in here from 20, 30 years ago is fundamentally really that different.
Right. It's still the same animal. It's still a ruminant system. And yeah.
So they could make it more glossy, but.
No, I agree completely.
All right. Good answer. What about your favorite book or resource outside of agriculture?
You know, it's probably not popular as popular in today's world as it has been in the past, but my favorite non-ag book is still the Bible, honestly. You know, I mean, the more we think things are changing, you go back there and go, it hasn't changed that much.
Human nature is the same.
Right? There's still a lot of the same. It's just, we're just in a different year.
There's a lot of shepherding and stuff in there, though. I don't know, you know, is it really a non-ag book? I'm just kidding.
Well, yeah, I mean, there was, yeah. David had some sheep. He took care of some sheep.
All right. Last but not least, in your opinion, what sets successful dairy professionals apart from those who are less successful?
Kind of stepped into it a little bit earlier that my biggest adjustment being a consultant was, you know, doing nutrition work was they want more of a relationship. And I think the good ones are able to bridge their knowledge and their science with caring about people. And I had a couple of clients, honestly, that we would spend 3 hours talking about kids and marriage. And then the last 20 minutes was, oh yeah, I'm about out of this. What can I sub in for that? And, oh yeah, this is costing too much. This guy, and you know, the nutrition piece a lot on some farms was pretty small. And so I think the good ones are able to marry that and bridge that gap between not just coming in with the science, which is what I did right off the bat and said, here's what you need to do. This, and then I'm gone. Well, I didn't last long there because I had to learn that, no, they want you to sit down, maybe go to town, have lunch with them and their son that they're grooming. And I spent a lot of time, honestly, because I was at the university helping, just consulting on which school to go to. I mean, how do you do that? I mean, what's the process of admission? And I'm like, dang, I'm supposed to be your nutritionist. And I'm helping you apply to college. you know, so I think the good ones are able to bridge that and bring all that together at the same time.
That's really interesting. I think you're absolutely right. One thing I learned talking with a guy managing a decent sized dairy like a year ago, it kind of struck me, but he said, basically, it's a pretty lonely job. And he likes the guys he works with, but frankly, none of them have English as their first language.
Right.
And so they can get by day-to-day work, but it's hard to just chat about life, you know, which is kind of sad, but he's basically a pretty lonely guy, you know? And so somebody comes in and he can chat with, that's part of the deal, I think.
One of the first dairies I went to work with, he was doing something and I was waiting in the office, and I came through the break room by the parlor and just visited with a couple of the milkers, and they were on break. And one of them gave me a burrito, and I went and sat down and was eating the burrito, and the owner came in. He goes, where'd you get that burrito? And I said, well, Jesus gave it to me. He goes, that guy's been working for me 15 years. He's never given me a burrito. And I said, well, have you ever stopped to ask about how he's doing? And I said, did you know his wife is sick? And did you know two of his kids are about to graduate and they don't know what they want? He said, I didn't even know he had kids. But it goes back to that language barrier. And his son is now taking over the dairy, and he's really worked at learning Spanish and being able to communicate. And I think they're doing better because of that.
That's good. Absolutely.
So I hear you. It is lonely if you can't speak it.
Well, Dr. Craig Peel, thank you so much. I've enjoyed the conversation today.
You're welcome, sir. Anytime.
Well, this has been another episode of the Dairy Podcast Show brought to you by Wisenetics. And if you haven't subscribed or liked the show, make sure you hit the button so that you don't miss the next episode. And we'll see you next time.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent from Brazil without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.